As you walk off the floor for the last time here in Seattle, Sue, what's the legacy that you've left behind as they praise you in every moment?
I mean, it's hard to say. I guess I just hope the next person that comes in and plays point guard here can just keep the tradition going. I hope I made everybody in here proud.
That was 1 week ago today, as Sue Bird left the court in Seattle one final time after the Las Vegas Aces beat her Seattle Storm to make the WNBA Finals. But despite the fact that Sue would obviously rather be playing for a championship instead of talking about the teams that still are, we decided to try our luck and give her a call. Sue, I have to be honest. I've been hounding you. I've been bothered. I've been sending you so many emails. I'm so sorry.
It's totally fine. I've also been like off the grid. So,
I totally understand. And part of me was thinking like, if Sue just didn't want to come on, I totally would have understood. I have no idea like where you are in your life, physically, emotionally. Like, how are you doing, Sue Bird, newly retired WNBA superstar, Hall of Famer, all-time great?
I'm doing well. I'm chilling, though. I'm on hard chill mode. yeah, nothing like really dramatic to tell you other than I'm definitely like consciously trying to stay off my phone a little bit, just try to like stay out of the loop and just kind of do me. I'm not even doing anything. I'm hard chilling.
Yes. And by the way, like, we should all aspire to do that more and more, like be less yes. on our phone, just sort of like loosen the shoulders, do some breathing purposefully. But I'm curious when you landed at that point where chill mode was going to be the mode, because, you know, your retirement for our purposes, for my purposes, speaking selfishly and personally here, came a little bit too early for my tastes.
Yeah, mine too.
But the last I saw you on TV, an entire crowd of people was chanting, "Thank you, Sue."
It was incredible. Obviously not the loss, and I mean, that goes without saying, but that moment, I found myself not wanting to leave the court. I didn't really know what to do either, though. Like, you know, our team did a little huddle. Usually a game ends and you're like, all right, guys, like, you know, either good job or, you know, on to the next one, that kind of a vibe, you know, storm on three and it's over and you walk off the court. And as my team started to walk, I started to follow them for a second. And then I just like, didn't want to keep going. I just like, didn't want to get off the court. So I kind of stayed, I lingered and then just kind of stood in the middle and waved. But like, what do? Like, there's so much to say, yet there's no way to say it. But I just really found myself not wanting to leave. And then, you know, eventually you have to.
This is the strangeness, right? Of you, person with, again, we've said this on the show before, there's no trophy left for you to win, right? Like, it would have been great to get this one, but you have pretty much all of the other ones. But to negotiate internally, like, I have to switch from, I am processing a loss that I was fighting as hard as I could to avoid, to now, I don't know, becoming a head of state, like, in a nanosecond, where it's like, I have to now be a diplomat talking to people and process retirement at the same time.
I do feel like I've been mentally preparing myself for this for a while. I think that was really the beauty of announcing retirement, just kind of going through it, understanding what was happening. So it doesn't feel quite as abrupt as that. But then at the exact same moment, it's as abrupt as hell. Like, it just like happens. You know, like on literally that morning, or really like the night before game four, I was like kind of getting ready to pack because, you know, you got to plan like you're going to win. And then we would have immediately left the next morning to go to Vegas to play game five. And then, oh, by the way, if we win game five, we're going straight to Chicago or Connecticut. It ended up being Connecticut.
Yep.
To play the first two games of the final. So it's like, you go from planning your like next week and a half, maybe even more, to nothing. I mean, and when I say nothing, I mean, I look around, I'm like, I have nothing to do right now.
And for the listener, Sue Bird, when saying this, is waving her hands in the air, stretching them out, and just smiling. I mean, Sue, part of me was also ready for you, I don't know, to like, I don't want to declare on your behalf that, man, you seem like you have reached already, days later, some level of serenity, zen.
No, that is not what's happening.
So what is happening?
It's not zen. There's moments of it. There's like moments of relaxation. And there's moments where I'm like, oh my God, basketball doesn't run my life anymore. And this is kind of freeing, you know, because I think any athlete will tell you it's legitimately 24/7, 365, even if you're out of season. It's just constantly on your mind. You're constantly making decisions for it, to get ready for it, to, you know, recover from it, whatever. And now I'm like, nah, I want that whole plate of fries. You know, like now I'm like, I'm just kind of able to. So that's so one part of it is kind of just shedding this athlete that's just been living inside of me, which is not going to happen overnight. There is another part of me where I'm like, oh my God, I have nothing to do. What am I going to do? This is very disorienting. This is not comfortable. I don't have a schedule. I'm no longer having people constantly, you know, tell me where to be or tell me what to do. And I get to just create that on my own. So it's like, there's a mourning happening. There's also like an excitement happening, and they're all happening at the same time. Sometimes literally at the same time. For the most part, I'm just like not overthinking it. I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be feeling. So let me just like, I don't know. I've been going for walks every day.
I love it.
I am trying to like hang out with friends and things like that. Really wondering, what am I going to do with all these basketball shoes? Like, I do not need these anymore. So, you know, just asking myself all the hard hitters.
Yes. Well, let me ask you one of my own then, Sue, because you have some free time. Are you down to stick around and talk about these WNBA finals with us for just a little bit?
Yes, I can talk about them.
It has been an all-time WNBA playoffs, full of historical performances and dramatic upsets, and one particularly extended, reluctant farewell. So today, ahead of Game 2 of the Finals, with the Connecticut Sun trying to even the series tonight in Vegas against the Aces, we bring you someone who knows this league better than anybody else. Someone who dominated it over 21 years and 13 All-Star games and 4 titles and more assists and more wins than anyone else in the history of the sport. And then Sue Bird tells us what it's really like to say goodbye. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, September 13th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Sue, the WNBA Finals are underway, and the Aces have beaten the Sun in Game 1 on Sunday, 67-64. And you are the perfect person to talk about this because you were just living this. You were just living a series against the Aces. And I'm just curious what your experience was as you now understand it and how that comes to bear upon a team that, yeah, was the betting favorite to win the whole thing and now is on their way to actually doing it.
Yeah, I mean, they are tough. There's a reason they're in the finals. The style in which they play, they're very well coached. You can see that there's no miscues out there. Yeah, people make mistakes. That's basketball. That's sports. But like, there's not miscues. They feel as if they're a team that is on the same page at all times, even when they do have those little mistakes. They are really loaded in that basically they have 5 people on the floor, with some exceptions here and there, but 5 people on the floor that can go for 20, you know, if you leave them.
Yes.
If I had to like pinpoint one separating quality of this team that is different from other WNBA teams, when you are trying to scout them, when you're trying to make a scheme for them, when you're trying to understand like, okay, how can we stop them? At some point, they have three between Chelsea Gray, Asia Wilson, and Kelsey Plum. And then you could throw Jackie Young in there to an extent too, but really three players that at any point will just take you one-on-one.
Mm.
And to be able to ISO people in that way, what's the scheme for that other than like guard them and play good defense, right? It's not like, right. Oh, let's trap it. Oh, let's try to do this. Oh, we have to rotate here or do that. Nope. Sometimes. And I think Chelsea Gray more than anyone in these playoffs has shown like, it's just going one-on-one. She's literally just having probably one of the more epic playoff runs I've ever seen, especially yes. from a guard. So that's like, how do you stop a team that goes one-on-one like that? It's like, how do you stop multiple players who can just at any point ISO and do it on them by themselves? It makes it really difficult to guard them. The only other thing I would add is looking back at our series and kind of looking at box scores, I'm like, dang, if only we had held Chelsea to 50%. You know what I mean? Like, she's just shooting so absurd.
Well,
yeah.
Let's talk about Chelsea. Because, I mean, so in game one, right? I want to get this right. She goes for 21, 3, and 2 in 35 minutes. And that's kind of a letdown at this point because she's been having, I mean, Sue, by some estimations here, like the greatest playoff run we have ever seen. Mm-hmm. She's been averaging 23 on 60% shooting, right? She's been shooting about 60% from three.
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to defend her and mm-hmm. she's in that mode, I mean, how do you even describe that mode? How often have you seen that mode as someone who is occasionally, I imagine, like felt that mode yourself?
No, I haven't. Not like that. Her one-on-one ability and her talent, I think a lot of it has to do with her. She's an incredible ball handler. So she can really just kind of toy with a defender, get to the spot she wants to get to at all times.
Gray, six to shoot. She wants it. She's got it. Chelsea Gray. A master.
Her size plays a big role because she shoots that. If you've ever watched her, she has a fadeaway mm-hmm. with her pull-up. It's just kind of her natural shot.
Here comes the high screen from Wilson. Gray one-on-one with Stewart. Connects on the jumper with 10.6 to go.
What a tough shot.
And so at her size with a fadeaway, I actually don't know exactly how tall she is. Let's call it 6'1", somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, 5'11", 6 feet is what she's listed at. Yeah,
okay,
in that range.
Okay, yeah. But when you add a fadeaway to that size from a point guard standpoint, you're like 6'3".
Mm.
So having smaller, quicker defenders guard her. You know, I saw Natisha Heidelman, there was one possession where she guarded her in game one. And it's like, yeah, she's quicker, but she's smaller. And then maybe she gets a bigger defender. But then it's like, the way she can maneuver with her ball handling allows her to be like a little bit more deceptive. So what we tried to do was try to get as much size on her as possible throughout the series. And then at some point, you know, she was just on this incredible run. That's why I joke. I mean, she shot 60% in our series. I'm like, oh, had only we held her to like 55 even, we win that series. Because that's how close the games were.
Right.
But she was just incredible.
Tied at 87. Gray. You bet! Chelsea Gray! It's just unreal what she's doing in these playoffs.
The shot making, the tough shot making from a guard, I've literally never seen it in our league.
And just the psychology of a defender trying to stop a person who will not miss. What's that feel like?
I mean, it's gutting. It really knocks the wind out of you. Just the sails of the defender, I think the sails of the team. But you know, it's interesting, like, you see it in the Diana Taurasi's and the Maya Moores, but I don't, not like this.
Mm.
Not this stretch and not this efficiency. It's been incredible and it is really tough when somebody is playing that way. And then, oh, by the way, it's not like you can go double off Asia or Plum or Jackie Young or Raquana Williams. Yeah, so it made it really tricky and that is what you're seeing in their play.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you can't stop Chelsea Gray, but the good news is you can try to stop the league MVP.
Yeah.
here's Asia Wilson, who happens to have 24, 11, 2, and 4 blocks in game one. And the dynamic that they have, you've mentioned that they all can ISO you and break you down from all over mm-hmm. the court, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But what Asia does as she's in this weird, like, second fiddle role right now, almost? I mean, is it that? Am I overstating things? Just how do they play with those people at their peaks, seemingly, in their own ways?
No, I think they just fit. I wouldn't say there's fiddles. I think they all just like pick their moments. You know, I think back to our game four and it felt like Kelsey Plum was really the aggressor early on.
Yeah.
She got off to a great start. She was in like double digits pretty quickly. And it wasn't that Chelsea wasn't doing her thing at times and Asia was definitely doing her things, but it felt like, okay, in that moment, I don't know if that was their game plan or it just happened. Plum was really aggressive. And then what happens is I think what makes Asia so tough is there are times where they go to her, right? And she looks to take her player one-on-one, whatever. But then she's also just going to get her own with offensive rebounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, with like these different moments where she can just find ways to be around the basket and finish plays for them. So in that sense, she's always there. So it's like the ball kind of changes with the aggressor, but Asia's kind of always just hovering there because she doesn't always need the ball to be effective. She's going to kill you with her rebounding. So she's just like a constant in that way.
The Sun, I mean, their path to these finals, and again, they're down one game in this series, but their path, I mean, this has been truly incredible as a spectator, feeling none of the feelings that you have felt. It's just been so fun, top to bottom, to watch this unfold. And their series against the Sky, Sue, I mean, I don't know how much you got to watch it as you guys were in your parallel path, but can you describe what the Sun showed you, what you learned about them in the process of them making it here?
I mean, you want me to be honest? Nothing. I already knew. Like, I think anybody who's played against them, anybody who's watched them in the last couple of years, you just kind of know what you're going to get from them. And it's almost annoying because you're like, this is just who they are. And I'm treading lightly here because I don't want it to sound negative. It's not negative, but there's nothing like flashy about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could literally go out there right now and run all their plays. The plays are what the plays are. There's nothing tricky. I guess that's maybe flashy is not the right word. It's like tricky. There's no tricks up their sleeve. They are who they are. You know what Alyssa Thomas is going to try to do. And yet she just keeps doing it. And with that, anybody who's played against them, anybody who's watched them play is not surprised by this. I mean, there's a reason they finished third in the league. It's not like they finished eighth or ninth or something like that, you know?
Right.
But I think at times they get overlooked because they don't have these like tricks up their sleeve, for lack of a better. They also lost their point guard very early in the season, which I think a lot of people just assumed that was going to be like a negative thing.
Yeah, how do you adjust to that, Sue? How do you adjust to losing your point guard, Jasmine Thomas, who missed most of this season with a torn ACL?
Time. And then also like not trying to fill the shoes in the way that Jasmine did it, but just like, okay, now like Natisha Heidelmer brings this whole other type of player and just allowing her to be herself. What they also do is they go to these big lineups. So there'll be times where they have Alyssa Thomas playing point guard. You know, she's a post player. She can play like the three and the four, but for all intents and purposes, she's a post player.
Right. Had 11 rebounds, had 19, 11, and 5 in game one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's going to fill it up. That's why I said, like, you know what she's going to do, but like, okay, it doesn't mean you can stop it, you know? And then they have a player like Jonquil, where if she gets going, forget it. She's like virtually unguardable when she's got it going.
Yep.
Dewana Bonner. I mean, I can go down the list. Courtney Williams. I can go down the list. But that's how I would say, I think, if you know, this is not surprising.
So I want your sort of veteran savvy here, someone who's, you know, won four titles and everything and seen it all. The finals as an animal that is just different from previous rounds of the postseason even. What about this point of the year needs to be accounted for when you're thinking through a series like this?
I think fatigue is something you think about, although both teams don't go super deep in their bench, so that might even it out. I actually think like in this series, what's really fascinating is the history of the teams. You know, I think you could argue, and I'm sure in the Vegas locker room, they talk about this. Last year, they could have and should have won. They lost a incredibly tough series to Phoenix.
Yep.
Phoenix deserved it. This isn't about, by the way, I hate sometimes talking about this stuff. People are like, oh, they didn't deserve it. It's like, it's not about deserve. It's not about whether a team deserves it or not. It was just like, it was probably theirs to lose and or theirs to win, however you want to frame it. And I'm sure they look back on last year and feel like they tricked away an opportunity. So they're going to be super hungry. But then on the other side, you have Connecticut, who feels disrespected by people, who feels like people overlook them, who has also made it to the finals and lost. And they also last year lost a series to Chicago. So these are the two teams that I think everybody would have put in the finals last year.
Mm.
But both had really, really tough losses in the semis. And yet now they're here. So I think hunger always plays a role in the finals. I think that's what makes repeating so hard.
Right. Hasn't been done since when? The LA Sparks, right? Like 2 decades ago.
Yep.
You have a team that, okay, wants to individually pick you apart. Then you have a team that you've described here that has a playbook that everybody can read. And it really doesn't matter.
Right.
And so who do you like, Sue? Who do you like in this series?
Oh, man. This is a very difficult series to predict. God, it's really tough to go against Vegas just because I felt what it's like when they've got it going in the way that they've got it going right now. I guess the question then becomes, can Chelsea and Asia sustain this level of efficiency? And that's just like the law of averages.
Regression to the mean is a tried and true law.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Like I said, like, and this is a compliment. I'm like, oh my God, if we had just held her to 50%, that would have been, you know, like, and 50 for a guard.
I just want to count for the record that Sue Bird has now said this 3 times in case anybody is curious about how frustrating this might have been. Yeah.
That she was literally on just like another planet.
No, it was absurd.
And if
absurd.
Yeah. And if they continue to play that way, it's very difficult to see a team beating them. But like I said, Connecticut wears you down.
I can sense, Sue, that you have like your rational brain dispassionately analyzing this series really rigorously and seriously. But like I sense, because I'm projecting my feelings onto you now, I sense you being like, I would rather that the team that beat me wins because that way I lost to the champion.
No, I'm actually the opposite in some weird way. First of all, I'm not either. But like what I would argue is like, no, that's going to make me mad. Because that's going to mean we should have won. We could have won. A lot of people have like subscribed to that through the years. Like,
yes, contingency
plans. Oh, well, I want to see the
plans.
Team that beat us. Yeah, and I'm like, what? That doesn't make me feel better. It's the worst. I never... No, if you want to know what I'm actually thinking, I'm not saying is like, wow, we really blew game 3. And that still is going to hurt for a really long time. And had we won that, this whole thing is different. That's really what I'm thinking.
After the break, I want to get to what you're going to do with, yes, defeat in the rear view, but also a life, a career that's pretty much unlike anybody else that I've ever met.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom. Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So when we spoke on the pod before the season, Sue, you were not going to do the retirement tour. And then you did. And I'm just curious when it clicked for you that this was going to be a thing that you're going to want to have done.
We were maybe a month into the season, give or take. And I started looking ahead to the schedule. And I don't remember the exact day, but like, let's call it like June, like 18, 19, somewhere in there. I was like, oh. This is my last game in New York. And there was something about that changed things for me. It was just this like overwhelming feeling of wanting my friends, my family just different people in the New York area who have been a part of my career.
Yes, Sue Bird was playing at home.
That's right. Exactly. So there was just something, I can't even, it was just an overwhelming feeling of like, oh, I need these people to know. Like, I want to share this with them. This is like more than likely my last time. And that made me think like, all right, clearly you're wanting to say something before that game. What's interesting is like, if that game was in August on the calendar, who knows what would have happened? Literally, like maybe I wait until then. I don't know.
Right. You're breaking this news to me on this podcast that you're done, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, but that was really like the driver. That was the motivator. So then thought about it. Time went, got closer. Time went, started really feeling it. And then it started becoming very clear that this is what I wanted to do. And I started to put that in motion. And it's the best decision I made. There were so many amazing byproducts that I never would have thought of or counted on or thought I even needed. Even if I did think of them, didn't think I needed them. And as it turns out, I did.
And those byproducts, those happy surprises, what were they? What did you find out that you actually really did need?
Let me frame it this way. Me saying I was done, I think put people in like sixth gear on trying to either see me play, on trying to, you know, when they run into me sharing a moment, maybe some fans, if they see me in the airport, don't feel the need to say anything. But now it's like, they weren't going to miss this opportunity. So it really just, I think, gave everybody, myself included, this mentality of like, okay, don't want to miss an opportunity now since they're obviously running out. And it was really amazing to hear some of the stories, meet some people, have the fan turnout, both in Seattle, but on the road, be what it was. I mean, every single road game was
crazy.
Like
lines. There was a video of the line at Mohegan Sun, and it was just snaking through the casino endlessly. It was insane.
Yeah. And it was like really, it felt really good because you go through a career and on some level, you know what you've accomplished, right? Obviously, I know what I've accomplished in terms of like championships. Those are tangible. But in terms of impact and like being able to inspire people, you kind of know. But this like actually let me know. It actually showed me. I actually got to feel it. And what I hope and, you know, what I tried to express was that this was like a mutual thing. Like I was also getting a lot from you know, having these experiences and being able to share my thank yous. And not just with fans. It's like with teammates, with current players, you know, like so many current players, even like during games would take the moment to be like, I remember watching when I was a kid. I just want to say thank you. Like, you know, you killed it. Great job. Wait, like, good luck with everything. I'm like, oh, thanks.
On the court and like the flow of play.
Sometimes. Announcing the retirement gave everybody, like I said, it kind of put people in go mode.
Yeah.
It also gave people an opportunity to share. And you don't always get those opportunities. So it was a once in a lifetime thing.
And I imagine, as we spoke about playbooks before, I imagine when you have so many interactions at this pace and volume about the same topic, that you have a sort of like way that you like to, I don't know, get into it with people or sort of keep it moving. How did you negotiate? Like, because I imagine, again, this is the head of state problem. It's like everybody wants to keep shaking your hand. And sometimes you got to be the one to unclench first, I imagine.
Yes. I think it's just dependent on the day, on the mood, on who it was, on all the things. I do laugh at myself because like, you know, after kind of going on this farewell tour and, you know, every arena that I played in, it was like, prior to the game, they would do a little video and they would thank me. And there sometimes there was like a gift and you have to go to half court.
Yep.
And even in Seattle with my final home game and then final regular season home game and then what ended up being my final home game, I laugh at myself when I see pictures because I was kind of like running out of like how to like do my hands. Like there was the two hands up, there's the one hand, there's the peace, thank you, there's the wave, there's the hands over the heart,
the queen wave.
Yeah, and I never did the queen wave. I never did the queen wave. I should have added that.
R.I.P.
There was like a hand over my heart.
So good.
As if to say like, oh, from the heart, thank you. Then there was, you know, doing the heart, like putting my two hands together and showing the heart.
Yes.
So I was like running out, but that's like what the moment is. It's like you're kind of like taking it all in and you don't really always know how to express yourself. Or like you don't even have the ways to.
You got
to
hit those poses, Sue. You have a catalog of moves that you had to
I saw Serena do her little twirl. I'm like, wow, I should have added my little pirouette. What was I thinking?
Yeah, you got to go. The double kiss. Did you ever explore that? Just like the operatic.
Oh, I did it once.
Oh, yeah. See?
I did that on my last game. I did a hit him with a double kiss. All genuine, though.
No,
but yeah. So it's a great question because that is happening actively.
Yes. No, and to be clear, of course, like it's hard not to feel real things. I'm just wondering, how did you keep that in check? Like, because I guess there's also the possibility that every time you're just overcome with stuff, now that the floodgates are open for everything, you know, you end up sort of on memory lane in ways that are a little jarring.
Yeah, I think, I didn't lack emotion. I just wasn't, it never really overwhelmed me until the final game. And I think what that shows me is I am ready, you know, because in my private moments at home, yeah, of course there's like emotions left and right. But in those like bigger moments, it really was just like, okay, this feels right. And I get to share this and have these moments. And there's a couple of times I got choked up throughout the course of the year at different points.
Yeah.
I think I hit it well enough where nobody saw, but yeah, it happens. But at the same time, yeah, because it wasn't like I wasn't boo-hooing every 5 seconds. I'm like, okay, clearly I feel at peace, right? Like clearly I'm calm about this.
So the new routine and let's call it the post-chilling phase. And by the way, totally free to never
to
stop
chill as
chilling.
Long as I want. Yeah.
To always chill.
Thank you.
But you know, the standard line of questioning when it comes to a person of your stature in your sport is to ask about coaching, is to ask about team ownership, is to ask about certainly broadcasting, which today has been a clinic. If anyone was wondering, I think you have a resume that's pretty public at this point. But like, do you have a sense of that, or where are you? And am I jumping the gun by even asking you to confront these things right now?
I think my sense is I want to like explore, and I've been exploring, you know, you mentioned like, whether it's like broadcasting stuff or like, you know,
yes.
Even working for Denver in their front office, or there's been some exploration. And I think I still am feeling like I want to keep doing that. Listen, the end of this answer is I don't know exactly what I want to do. The start of the answer is I want to keep exploring because I don't want to be tied down by one thing. Like I don't want to have this. So coaching to me, there's somewhat of an interest there. The life really kind of like turns me off. I feel like I just lived that life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take a coaching job, you are now 100% tied in. You are locked in. It consumes your life. I'm not ready for that. Like I'm not looking for that. So the cool thing is, I think I have enough on my calendar this year. You know, one example that's like easy to use is like the Peyton's Places that got announced a couple months ago. Like,
yep.
Gonna have to, you know, not have to because I want to, but gonna film that. So like there's like these little things that exist on my calendar where I feel comfortable in my hard chilling mode because I know something exists in the future. So it's just enough where I feel calm about it, but not too much where I feel stressed and overwhelmed by it. And I think as time goes, things will just start to like pop up and I'll get to see what I want to explore and what I don't and just go from there.
But so far, the best thing about having your freedom of time, of choice, of just agency at this point is what right now?
Taking walks. No, I'm joking. No, the best thing is not a lot of people can say that they're not stressed about these types of question marks and these types of decisions. And I feel just really lucky that I have a lot of options and I'll hopefully get to just choose what makes the most sense for me. And not everybody's in that position. Whenever I do get whipped up about, because there are times where I get whipped up. I'm not this calm all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like there are definitely times where I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to be when I grow up?
I'm startled by your calmness so far.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not always like this. There are definitely times, you know, in my, again, private moments where it's like, holy, like, what is this going to be like? New life alert. What is it? There's definitely times where I get whipped up about it. And then I kind of like, I'm able to like center myself, kind of ground myself back in the reality of like, oh, you're going to be fine because you have some amazing options. It's just going to be about figuring out what makes sense for you.
So the last question here, as we reach the end of your exit interview, Sue, as it were. If you were to tell young Sue Bird what exactly the rest of her career was going to be like, or you have the opportunity to say anything to the younger version of yourself now that you're decades removed. What are you informing yourself?
I mean, usually I joke and I'm like, Lil Sue, don't wear that. Don't wear that. Think about it before you wear that. That's going to be on Google for the rest of your life. No, do you want to know what I would tell Lil Sue? True story.
Please.
I'd be like, go to therapy. Start therapy immediately. I feel like I've started therapy recently in the last couple months, and you just learn so much about yourself. It's a game changer for how you navigate the world. And I think for Little Sue, she would have needed it in general, but it also would have helped her be an even better person, but also even a better basketball player on some level. I actually said that to my therapist the other day. I was like, oh my God, if I did this 20 years ago, I'd be a better basketball player. She was like, you did all right. You did all right. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah, Sue, I'm not as qualified as your therapist, but allow me to reiterate, I think you did all right.
Thank you,
Sue Bird, for hard chilling with us on ESPN Daily.
Is that going to be the name of my podcast, Hard Chilling?
I think it has to at this point.
I just name it?
I think we just did. Absolutely.
I like it.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.